You know, Shawshank Redemption is really, it's a fascinating movie, really an incredible story. And I don't know the story behind the people who screenwrote or produced the movie, but they're people who seem to have a really good grasp on how change happens, on how spiritual change happens, which is redemption. See, redemption is whenever God comes in and takes something in its current form and actually changes it for a higher purpose. And that's what we saw right there in that scene. We saw Andy, a person in their current situation who makes a break, and then he goes through some intermediary process. He goes through this pipe, of foulness, and he actually comes out on the other end, and he's cleansed on the other end. And that process in and of itself, there's actually four very distinct changes that happen, four distinct phases that every single one of us go through when we go through a change process. And so we're going to look at this today. My name's Kurt. Really excited you're here with us as we conclude the Start series. And before we jump into looking at these phases, let me pray for us this morning. God, thank you that we can come into this place. And God, as I talk this morning, I ask that it wouldn't be me talking. It wouldn't be me that people are sensing things from, but that you would be talking to us, that you would give us the thoughts that maybe we need in these next moments, that you would give us impressions, maybe even senses, because I know that you can do things that we can't do for ourselves. So I ask God that all of us would encounter you in some way this morning, and I pray these things in your name. Amen. Well, you know, that process that Tim Robbins went through in Shawshank Redemption is the exact same process that the people of the nation of Israel went through when they broke out of slavery in Egypt. And just out of curiosity, how many of us have seen Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments? Seriously, like you call yourself an American and that's it right there? Okay, how about like DreamWorks' Prince of Egypt? Or the newest movie with Christian Bale of God and Kings? Anybody seen that? Okay, wow. Well, maybe you've read it in the Bible, though likely not. I mean, if you've not seen the movies, you've probably not, read this story in the Bible. But, if you were to read it in the Bible, it's the same process that the nation of Israel went through. And the change process, the redemption process is exactly the same that Tim Robbins goes through in Shawshank Redemption. And what's ironic about this is it's the exact same process that every single one of us are in today. And so, for you, I'm going to talk through four distinct phases today. I've taught these phases before, but these are so central to us actually completing the change that I want to go through them again. Because if you've heard them before, likely you are at a different place or dealing with a different issue at this particular time. And I guarantee you that you are in one or more of these phases. Possibly you're in multiple phases, depending on what area of your life you're wrestling through right now. And so I want us to talk through these four phases. The first phase is the referred to as the blahs. All right, it's referred to as the blahs. The nation of Israel went through, was in the blahs. They were under rule of Pharaoh. They were in slavery. They'd been in slavery for a long time. They were experiencing the blahs. The blahs is your current situation. The blahs is, your status quo. It's not like there's anything awful happening in the blahs, but it's not like there's anything amazing happening either. It's basically, we just normally don't see that life could actually be better. Now, here's the thing. The nation of Israel, they had actually been in slavery for hundreds and hundreds of years. And you would think that if they were in slavery, if they were in bondage, they would actually have a plan. They would actually have a desire to get out of the blahs, all right? But they don't have that. And so instead, they're very content staying in mediocrity. They're very content staying right where they are. And so God moves through a leader by the name of Moses. And God says to Moses, "Moses, I need you to go on behalf of your people to the Pharaoh, and I need you to get them free." And so that's what Moses does. He goes to Pharaoh and starts negotiating with him. And he's basically like, "I want you to free the nation of Israel from slavery." And Pharaoh is so frustrated. He gets so upset with this. He says, "Moses, here's what I'm going to do for you and your people. I'm actually going to double their workload. I'm not going to let them go. I'm actually going to double what I'm requiring them to do," which is what often happens when we're in the blahs. Things never get better before they get worse. In fact, take a look at Exodus chapter 5. Here's what it says. It says, "Moses returned to the Lord and said, 'O Lord, why have you brought trouble upon this people? Is this why you sent me?'" So Moses is basically saying, he's like, God, before you asked us to change, before you asked me to step in and intervene right here, life was predictable. Life was nice. You know, that's how the blahs always are. It's very predictable. We know what we're getting. It's a place that you've been in for a long time, so there's no turmoil. There's rarely stress. Rarely are there ulcers because it's the status quo. It's just blah. And yet at the same time, there's no advancement. There's no growth. There's no spiritual intimacy with God when we're in the blahs either. Picture I always love when I think about the blahs is that of a toddler sitting in a dirty diaper, right? You know, think of a toddler sitting in his own crap. Just think of that for a moment, right? Just picture that in your mind. You know, we've all seen that, right? And you see him and you're like, hey, did you load your pants? And they're like, no. You know, and they're just sitting there because in their mind, they're like, well, it's warm and it kind of stinks, but it's mine and I made it, so I think I'm going to keep it, right? I mean, that's kind of like what the blahs are like, right? It's like I made this thing, but I know it, so I think I'm going to keep it. And it's not like it's awesome, but it's not like it's terrible either. And so you just stay there. And see, for some of us, we're probably in the blahs financially. You know, there's way too much month left at the end of our money. And so, you know, one of the reasons we stay in the blahs, one of the ways that we're able to continue that is via Visa, right? I mean, we get to the end of our money and we just turn to Visa. In fact, I saw a couple weeks ago, at the end of 2014, the average credit card debt of America in December 2014 for people who don't pay off their credit cards monthly was $15,600. And what happens when you're in debt, which by the way, I've been there. Julie and I have been there. We've actually, you know, worked ourselves out of debt. What happens when you're there is you just learn to live with it. It's not like it's terrible, but it's not like it's awesome either. And so you just learn to live in the blahs. That's why we have this thing called a financial counseling ministry here at Crosspoint. In fact, on your connection card, if you're interested in meeting with a counselor, you know, for free, that can kind of walk you through, you know, how to begin to get out of debt, you can mark that on the back of your connection card because you might be in the blahs. Let's say you're dating someone and, you know, your relationship has gotten to the place where you just feel like, you know, okay, it seems like sex is kind of the next thing. It seems like that's a good idea. It should happen. And maybe you don't know that God actually thinks that that's not a good idea unless you're in the context of marriage. Or maybe you know that, but you don't care. Or maybe, you know that, but you don't agree with it. Or maybe you know that, and just in a moment of weakness, you know, you go there. So for whatever reason, you know, you have sex with somebody you're dating, and it really, really complicates the relationship. You know, because all of a sudden there's all kinds of emotional dynamics going on. There's additional strings attached now, and it makes it much more difficult to actually eliminate the relationship if you get it to a point of needing to do that. It's not like things are bad, but things aren't going well. But you're like, man, I don't know how to get out of this thing. You're in the blahs. Even though the relationship might not be terrible, you know, you can't imagine getting out because it's got really, really complicated. Which, by the way, let me give a little commercial right here. I am super excited about our series starting 2 weeks from today, Married People. And this is for people who are single, for people who are married, married again, single again, divorced. You know, because here's the thing. If you don't understand God's design for marriage and his standards for marriage, you know what happens? We just make it up as we go. And so we're going to be taking a look at how to thrive in marriage, brand new teaching series, Married People, and because great marriages can't wait. We need them right now. So, you know, maybe your marriage is in the blahs. Maybe your dating life is in the blahs. Maybe your finances are in the blahs. Maybe your kids are in the blahs, right? You don't think that's funny, right? I thought that'd be funny. You know, so seriously, maybe your kids are in the blahs. It's not like they're tanking. But it's not like they're thriving either. You know, they're just, it's not like they annoy you, but they just annoy everybody else, you know. And so, you know, but you're doing nothing to actually strategically build them to a different place. And here's what happens when we're in the blahs. If we don't catch these significant moments where change can happen when we're in the blahs, it actually begins to eventually move to the brutals, right? And the brutals is when personal bankruptcy happens. All right, this is where eventually you're dating someone and it goes sexual and all of a sudden somebody gets pregnant and nobody wants to take, you know, nobody wants to, you know, to own that deal. You know, this is when, you know, when maybe your kids, you know, they're not thriving and there's some things going on and then it's kind of a blah phase, but the brutals hit and all of a sudden they hit adolescence and before long, you know, the brutals is all of a sudden they've got a heroin addiction. And you're like, oh man, you know, it's where there's a personal bankruptcy at some level and you're forced to change. All right, see, the trick in the blahs is to realize when I'm in them and to actually voluntarily make the change before I'm forced to make the change. And listen, here's the thing. I don't like to talk about these things if we don't have an application point. In fact, you know, the worst thing that can happen with me on a Sunday morning is we go through services and you walk out of here and you're like, oh, wow, you know, those were really good spiritual principles. I mean, those are just a few good things to live by. That drives me crazy. All right, so we're going to have an application moment at the end of our time this morning. I want us to get clear on what that means for us right now. So let's just bow our heads if you don't mind doing that. And let me pray for you that you get real clear on what this application is for you today. As we're sitting here right now with our heads bowed, you know, we don't need stuff to just fill an hour up. We don't like to do stuff that just takes up time. That's actually very unproductive. And so, God, I just ask that you would help us grow this morning. And before I talk anymore, maybe you've already began to do this, but I want to ask you to bring to the front of our minds whatever that thing is that we're in the blahs in or that we've recently been in the blahs in and maybe recently just made the break on. Help us to see that right now. Bring that to the front of our minds. Help us to recall what it should be or what it is, or impress on us, speak to us right now at this moment. I've given 3 or 4 illustrations already, but man, there are dozens and dozens of things that you might be bringing to our mind right now. Help us to focus on one. All right, so I'm going to trust that you have something on your mind. And if you don't, I hope you can figure it out as we kind of keep talking here. So whatever that thing is, whatever that thing is that just kind of got you going, oh, it's like the blahs. How do we actually change to where we begin to see growth? All right, the next phase is what we refer to as the break. It's the break. This is the moment where you move from where you are to a new place. It's where you say, okay, I'm going to actually begin to do something different. We see this with the nation of Israel. They have a break. Here's what their break looked like. Exodus chapter 12. It says, now the length of time the Israelite people lived in Egypt was 430 years. At the end of the 430 years, to the very day, all the Lord's divisions left Egypt. So when they broke is when they actually got out of bondage, where they actually decided to do something differently. Now, there are all sorts of things that were supposed to happen for them. All right, they were supposed to get to the promised land. They were supposed to enter into this really intimate relationship with God. And those things are going to happen at some other point. But the break is that definitive moment where they decided, I'm going to move to the new. That's what the break is. It's when you must take a specific action. We talked about this 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago. There's got to be something I do to break and move to a different place to experience growth or change. Somebody came up to me not too long ago and shared with me that they had been abused sexually as a child. And as they were telling me about this, you know, she said, Kurt, you know, you can't just like move on when you've had something like that happen to you. Just like, bam, all of a sudden everything's fine and I'm not impacted by that anymore. And as I heard that, I thought, you know, that's very true. You know, very true. She's totally right. And if this is you, if you've got something you're working out of that's got some deep, deep, you know, grief for you, it's not like bam, all of a sudden it's gone. So what is the break? Where is the break in this process then? See, the break is not eliminating the grief. All right? The break isn't the moment where the grief is gone. The break is the moment I say, I'm going to go to counseling. That's the break right there. The break is when you say, okay, I'm going to tell somebody about this so I'm not living in secret or in silence on this any longer. See, the break is when you do something new to actually get to a new place. And what's very interesting about this is you and I, we actually have a very a vested interest to not change. Do you realize that? Do you realize that there are certain things in the physical world that are mirrored in the spiritual world that actually cause us to not want to change? In fact, this right here is a double helix. And if you work in any kind of medical industry or science or biology, you're very familiar with this. And see, this double helix is represented in your body, in your DNA. And in fact, physically, you know, your DNA, every time a cell reproduces itself, it passes the blueprint for your body, for your life, on to the next cell it reproduces. All right, so as it keeps reproducing cells in your body, there are certain systems built into our DNA that are passed on to the next cell to basically keep the integrity of your blueprint intact. Now, when I say integrity, I don't mean purity. Right? I mean the integrity, meaning the very same blueprint, which means you could be mapped out to have cancer at, say, age 45 in your DNA, in your blueprint for your body, and that's going to be reproduced into every cell that's produced in your body. All right, and so the form or structure of that DNA is reproduced exactly. And if it doesn't happen that way, there's actually something, a function in your cells that basically detonate themselves. Basically, they eliminate themselves if they're not the exact same as the previous cell. And this is very interesting because this is what happens in the physical world. Now, just so you know, I don't know this stuff, all right? I actually had to, like, reach out and have somebody tell me how this works, and, because I'm not that smart. Some of you, I may have said it wrong. So if I said it wrong, those of you that know, you can tell me after service, and I'll correct it second hour. But see, the body has a way of protecting itself. And this is the thing. This is why change never happens. You know, we eliminate the change. Anything that's different, we eliminate the change. There's a mechanism physically in our body that kills the new off if it's not exactly the same. You know, this is the same way it works in the spiritual world. All right, we're inclined not to change. That new idea that came across, that somebody said, hey, here's what you maybe ought to think about. If it's different than what we thought when we were 21 than we had when we were 41 or when we were 71, you know, we kill it off. Like, man, I'm fine the way that I am. I don't need to change. I'm fine. See, this is why making a break, doing something different is so, so hard. And maybe you're sitting here thinking, well, Kurt, man, I change all the time. I mean, I'm always changing jobs, and I'm always, you know, changing who I'm dating, and I'm always changing, you know, my wardrobe's changing all the time. I mean, you know, I change my vacation spots. No, that's not the change we're talking about. That's like fickleness right there, all right? That's like the lack of, like, see-through-itiveness, right? There's another word for you, Tammy. She loves when I make words up. You know, see-to-itiveness, you know, that's a lack of being able to see things through. I'm talking the core change that causes us, it's like how I view the world, how I operate. When I see something, I say, okay, I want this to be different, and I actually go make it happen. It is very, very difficult. This is why change is so hard. Financially, you know, a definitive break might be when you cut up the credit cards. You know, just put them in the oven, make a good old plastic souffle, all right? I mean, whatever it takes, you know, cut the credit cards up. Dating, when you're dating someone that's an unhealthy influence, it might just be saying, hey, listen, I'm done, I'm out of here. You know, whatever the situation is, it's when you make that definitive break. And guess what happens? When you make the break, here's the bad news. The problems aren't over, all right? Like the credit card bills, even though you cut them up, the bills keep on coming, right? I mean, you tell that unhealthy influence that you're dating, all right, I'm done, I'm out. You know what happens after you tell them that? Man, they storm the castle gates, right? I mean, they're like turned on that you're so definitive, and they're like calling you all the time. And so what usually happens is it actually gets harder before it gets easier. Right? And it's incredibly important that we understand where we are in this change process, because the third phase after you make the break is what's referred to as the blues. The blues. See, when we realize that we actually need to change, we do something definitive to make a different trajectory for our lives. See, the problems don't go away. In fact, they often get more intense, and this is what happens with the nation of Israel. It's incredible, incredible, miraculous moment. This miraculous thing happens. Pharaoh's chasing them after he's let them go, and they come to the Red Sea, and God actually parts the Red Sea for them. They actually walk across the middle of the Red Sea on dry land, and as they cross the Red Sea, when they get to the other side, Pharaoh's armies are closing in on them, because Pharaoh had a change of heart. He decided to go back after the slaves because he needed them. And as soon as the Israelites are out of the sea, the walls of water come crashing in and just, you know, decimate the Pharaoh army. I mean, it's one of these miraculous, like, incredible, you know, euphoric moments when you see it on the film or when you read it in the Bible and you think, man, these people should be on top of the world right here. Well, they're not. Reality hits. Reality hits. And here's actually what it says in Exodus 16, verse 2. It says, in the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, if only we had died by the Lord's hand in Egypt. There, we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted, but you have brought us into this desert. Notice how it's like, you. Look what you have done. You have brought us into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death. I mean, they like get to the other side of the sea, and instead of being euphoric about the miracle that just happened, they're like, man, I'm hungry. Where's the steak and shake? What do you mean there's no steak and shake over here? Where's Taco Bell? What do you mean there's no Taco Bell? I mean, come on, Moses, man, when we were over there, we at least had food. See, what happens when we're in the blues is we begin to fantasize about how good the past really was. See, for the Israelites, they're like, Moses, at least we were sitting around pots of stew. I mean, we had food to eat. What, you brought us out here to die. What are we doing? See, this is what always happens. When we make the break, we get into the blues, and we begin to there's this incredible temptation to actually go back to where we used to be. It's like, hello, you were slaves. I mean, you were slaves. But see, we can't see that. There's always something about that relationship we ended that there's something good that makes us want to go back. There's always something about that thing we purchased on credit, you know, that possession that we just had to have that we want to go back to. I mean, there's always something about where you were that we want to move back and experience again. And so we fantasize about it because we can't take the pressure and the stress and the tension that comes with the new. And sometimes, oftentimes, it gets worse. And sometimes the feelings, you know, and even the circumstance gets worse. And this is always how it works. Physically, it's how it works spiritually. I mean, just think about it for a moment. Who's been doing the gym since the first of the year? Out of curiosity. A few of you, all right. I mean, you know what I'm talking about, right? You do the gym, and all of a sudden, you're like, my body hurts. I just talked to somebody the night. They're like, oh, my legs are killing me because, you know, they're doing something in the new. I mean, you know, think about America. I mean, when we established ourselves as a country, there are 9 colonies, and we did something. We made a break. We said, we're signing the Declaration of Independence, making a break, you know, from England, from the British. And it was good for a few months, and all of a sudden, we hit the blues because warships started coming over from England, right? And all of a sudden, we're in the blues. This is why we always shortchange the change process. You know, I'll meet with people periodically, that are dealing with difficult crisis moments, marriage issues, do a lot of marriage stuff. I'm not a counselor, by the way, in case you think I'm a counselor. I'm not. You don't want me as a counselor, all right? But I will meet with people in the kind of the immediate crisis moment and try to say, okay, how can we help you get to a place of health and wholeness? And a lot of times there's, you know, addictions involved in marriage situations and affairs sometimes. And what I'll often hear from the spouse that has been violated, I'll hear them say, because I usually ask them, do you want to work on this? Do you want this to be healthy? Do you want this to be well? Do you want to be well? And I'll hear them say something like, the violated spouse will usually say something like, well, I need to hear that this is never going to happen again. I need to know it'll never happen again. So I'll look to the violator and I'll say, well, you know, can you do this? And they'll be like, man, I just don't know. And I'll be like, dude, come on. I mean, or missus, come on. I mean, you can do this. You can. And they're just like, man, I just don't know. I don't know that I can promise that I won't do this again. I'm like, you can. You can. And here's why I tell people that they can. And listen, I've said that before. I've been like, man, I don't know that I can do this. Here's what I've discovered. The reason I tell people in those moments, I mean, you can do this. You actually can do this. At least in most cases, is because the key to getting through the blues, once you've made a break and said, yeah, this wasn't good, once you've made the break, the key to getting through the blues is to set up automated systems that help push you through the blues process, right? Automated systems that maybe weren't there before that help you actually get through this phase. You know, sometimes I'll look at people, I'll say, man, you've been at Crosspoint for 3 months. I mean, previously, you weren't coming to worship together, coming together as a husband and wife to services where we're building into you. You didn't have that. Now, you have an automated system. You know, you're meeting with a small group of people, and you're connecting with people and sharing the crap in your life, and you're heading with people in the same spiritual direction. That's a system, an automated system that's actually helping you get healthy. It's something you didn't have before. See, what we want to do is we want to rely on who we are and just say, well, this is what I have, this is who I am, this is how I do things, and we never change. We never change. When we're in the blues, we have to set up an automated system to actually push to the new phase. We did a big gut check on this about 5 years ago here at Crosspoint. And we did a building fund campaign, which was basically to help fund this building right here. And we're now in our second campaign called the Launch Campaign. And we had hundreds and hundreds of us that committed and said, hey, we're going to go above and beyond what we normally give as our tithe. And we're going to help fuel and make this place happen. When we got to the end of the first campaign, first three-year campaign, we came in somewhere between 80 and 85% of what was committed actually came in. And I was a bit bummed by that, if I can be honest. I was a little bummed because I know for me, there was an incredible benefit that came from being a part of fulfilling that. And which, by the way, is the next step. We're going to talk about the benefit in a moment. But I think one of the reasons we had so many people who, you know, had all the intentions in the world to fulfill their commitment but didn't or weren't for some reason able to do that is because they didn't automate it. Right? They didn't automate it. Right, they didn't have an automated system to say, hey, you know, two times a month or one time, you know, every week, I'm going to set up an automated investment. Because it's just, those are hard things. Capital campaigns are brutal. They're brutal. In fact, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that, you know, if you find yourself there and you're like, man, I want to get on track with that or I'm behind on that, here's one of the ways you can automate that. You automate it with this envelope. Inside here, you can automate your giving. You can say, I'm going to have this pull off my bank card, you know, weekly or monthly or whatever frequency you want. Or you can go online and set up a recurring gift. We automate things. Church, you know, what we're doing right now. I think one of the reasons, at least I believe this is one of the reasons, that church attendance is up, you know, when we always get into January and February is because people say, I want to set a spiritual goal of going to church. And that's what church is. It's an automated system that basically builds into you. Something about gathering together. Or there's something about being challenged in this environment. And I would challenge you, if you're in the blues right now, then make 9:30 or 11 o'clock on Sunday morning an automated system. All right, short of an emergency, you should be here. You should say, man, this is my automated system where something's building into me that I wouldn't otherwise have in my life. Because it leads us to the fourth phase, which is the benefits. The benefits. So we go from the blahs, we make the break, we enter the blues, which are really rough, and then eventually we get to the benefits. And in Joshua 21, and I want to read this for you, and it's really important to note as I read this for you that this passage happens a long time after the original people broke out of Egypt. All right, they didn't receive the benefits right away because they did a lot of things that kind of nullified some of the work they'd done, and there's all kinds of reasons for that that we're not going to get into right now, but here's what it says in Joshua 21. It says, so the Lord gave Israel all the land he had sworn to give their forefathers, and they took possession of it and settled there. The Lord gave them rest on every side, just as he had sworn to their forefathers. Not one of their enemies withstood them. And the Lord handed all their enemies over to them. Not one of the Lord's good promises to the house of Israel failed. Every one was fulfilled. Now, there are two ways that great things happen in your life. All right, two ways. And everybody wants great things to happen, right? I want good things to happen in my life. You want good things to happen in your life. So two venues for great things to happen. The first venue is called grace. All right, grace is the element of God that causes him to give to us what we don't deserve. That song by U2 this morning, you know, that the moment I woke up and realized the miracle occurred and I received something that I didn't deserve. I mean, that's grace right there, all right? People who deserve nothing, and you know who these people are, right? These slimy people who you're like, man, they live a slimy life. You know who they are, right? They might be sitting next to you right now. But, you know, you're like, how in the world does God, why do they have good things happening in their life? There's no reason they should have something good happening in their life. Well, that's God's grace, all right? It's not understandable. You can't explain it. Sometimes it just happens. So the first avenue that we have to experience good things from God is grace. The second one is called justice. Now, my favorite justice story, do we still have Olin Mills in Indianapolis? Anybody know? We still have Olin Mills. Remember Olin Mills, kind of the place you used to get your family portraits? Well, you know, this is justice. Justice is the woman, the old lady who would go into Olin Mills and she'd say to the photographer, hey, now do me justice, do me justice. And, you know, when he'd look at her and he looked at her old face and he said, ma'am, with a face like that, you need mercy, not justice. All right? You know, we want justice. I don't think we want justice the way we say we want justice. All right? We actually usually want grace. See, mercy is like grace, but then there's justice. Justice is the principle by which you reap what you sow. Right? That's really what we're talking about. You get what you give. This is what we're talking about when it comes to the change process. All right, see, you can't control God's grace. You have no control over that. All right, but you can control what you reap, which then produces what you sow. And so, you know, the benefits come about as a result of us reaping certain things, making certain changes, building certain automated systems into our lives, you know, from the blahs to the break, and then we're in the blues, and we actually get to the place of experiencing the benefit. Your marriage does not have to stay where it is. It does not. Right? You can actually get through out of the blahs, or if you're in the blues, you can get out of the blues and into the benefit. But you have, and if that's where you are, man, make the month of February, February 8 through March 1, Married People Series, make that an automated system in your life. You need to be here for that. Right? You do not have to live with credit card debt. You don't. Right? But you reap what you sow. And so to change things, you actually have to change your holistic view of how you view your stuff and put some automated systems in. All right, your body doesn't have to stay the way that it is. All right, and unfortunately, I've noticed that God just doesn't send grace down to my body. Have you ever noticed that? You know, I mean, God doesn't like say, okay, I'm gonna send grace down and remove every ounce of fat on Kurt's body. Though some of you do have grace on your body. You realize that? I mean, you can eat like 4 bags of Cheetos and they never show up. That's God's grace, all right? I can't do that. I eat 4 bags, they show up immediately. All right, that's God's grace. Physically, you get to the benefits when you're aware of what you're reaping, when you go through the process. Now, here's the other thing before we close. And this is kind of weird, but one of the weird things is blessings are not nirvanas. All right? We always think the blessing phase or the benefit phase is when you change and then everything in your life is perfect. It's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be perfect because, you know, sometimes we're like, oh, man, I finally got this worked out. I mean, life, I'm 41, and life is perfect. Everything's going the way it's supposed to. You know, that doesn't happen because you know what God does? When you get through the change process, he brings the next test. All right, as soon as you get through the process, he actually brings the next thing. He's like, all right, here's what we're going to work on next. Why does he do that? Why does he do that? Well, here's why he does it. He does that because I believe God's ultimate goal for you is exactly what it was for the nation of Israel, for the Jewish people. See, God's ultimate goal for them was not some lush, comfy, cushy life. That was not his goal. His ultimate plan for them was to be in relationship with them. That was his plan. And he used the tests, he used the process of change to actually bring them into relationship with him. See, if we don't have to change, guess what? We don't need God. If we're sitting here saying, well, man, I'm good, my life's perfect, you know, my finances are popping, my marriage is popping, my relationships are popping, emotionally I'm popping. If there's nothing we need to change, you don't have any need for God. And this whole process, the whole goal that God takes us through on this process is to actually bring us closer and closer to his heart. And if we could begin to look at our problems in this way, to realize that every time we have something we need to change, this is actually a process God is taking me through so I can actually be more in tune and closer to the heart of God. Listen, it will change the way you see things. You'll begin to experience benefits that you've never experienced before. So I want to ask us to take out our connection card. Because as I said earlier, this is really important on the application phase. And every single one of us are in this process right now. And so I want you to think through, where am I in this process? And the band's going to do a song. And as they do that, on the back are some next steps. I want you to think through these next steps and to just identify, say, okay, here's what my step is to get to the next place. And the band's, the song that we're going to do is called Alleluia. And we're just going to sing that word over and over again. But, you know, the word Alleluia means to become reckless before God. To become reckless before God. And so we're gonna say, okay, God, how are you using where I am to bring me closer to you? I'm gonna mark my step, and then we're just gonna ask you to sing and begin to get reckless before the heart of God. And one more thing, and I hesitate to share this with you because I don't want to bum you out, but I feel like I need to tell you this. You know, there are some things in your life that are never going to change. And I hate to be a defeatist on this, right? There are some things in your life, though, that are never going to change. And you know, they're kind of built into your DNA for the rest of your life. And we're gonna look at these next week at game day. We're gonna look at adversity next week. How do we deal with the things that are there that we just have to deal with as we go through life? The thorns in our flesh. See, for me, I know selfishness is something I'm going to deal with for the rest of my life. As much as I've tried to combat it, I mean, every argument I have with Julie, when I trace that thing back, man, it's selfishness. I think for the rest of my life, I'm always going to want to get my way. I just like to have my way. And I think I'm getting better. I think I'm getting better at it. But selfishness is always going to be there. And so, you know, God's ultimate goal isn't the removal of the symptoms. He uses the change process to actually bring us closer to his heart. And I think that's what he wants for us. So let me pray for us as we think through this. God, I know that all of us are in different places right now of the change that we're going through. We're all in this process somewhere. And God, I pray that you would do what you do, that you would facilitate the change process right now and help us to become the people that we are designed to be. Help us to be able to identify the step, the thing that we need to do this week, not last week's step, but this week. And how we need to, whatever we need to do to implement that, to move us through the phase that we're in. And God, as we mark that on our card, we're going to sing this one word. We're going to sing this word, hallelujah. We're going to sing it over and over because, God, we know that you want us to become, you want us to come to that place where we are reckless before you, we are dependent on you, where we are so in tune with you because we're changing and we're growing and we're actually fully reckless before you. So God, I just pray these things in your name.